This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb. Good morning, listeners, and Happy New Year to everyone.
Yes, first Saturday of 2026. So many people wanting to get their garden prepared for the very hot weather that we have ahead in the next week that's coming. If you've got a question for Sophie, you can jump in the general Talkback Gardening queue on 1300 222 891. I'll have a couple of ABC magazines to give away later in the program, one by phone and one by text. And we welcome your comments, of course, on the text line 0467922891. But this morning we're going to talk about those really important things in our gardens. They're significant assets. They take a long, long time to grow. And that is our trees, Sophie.
Absolutely. And, you know, many people don't really appreciate the trees in their garden. Some people don't appreciate them until they get stressed or sick, and all of a sudden they realise that these big giants that they've been taking for granted actually need a bit of TLC. And with last year being the driest year on record in many parts of our state, the many trees in people's backyards were stressed. So let's talk about how we can look after the trees in our garden and make sure that that doesn't happen moving forward. So welcome, Michael.
Yes, good morning there, Deb and Sophie. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Michael Palamountain, arborist well known in South Australia. Does it all start with water?
Well, look, it's the fundamental ingredient in photosynthesis. So we've got water and carbon dioxide. There's no shortage of carbon dioxide, so water is our limiting factor. So the more water we can give our trees, the better chance they have.
Absolutely. And I just want to start by, before we talk about tree care, I actually want to just rabbit on yet again about the value of trees, because people often don't realise that, you know, a big tree in your yard can actually improve the property value of your home. And then there's all the other values they bring by keeping your home cooler in summer, so less air conditioning, so less money spent on power bills, and, you know, increasing habitat, getting rid of pollutants, all those sorts of things. So trees are not just, you know, something for aesthetics, are they, Michael?
Well, look, Sophie, you've touched on three key areas that trees provide in terms of benefits. So we bundle them, some of them, into human benefits, the benefits that we can all experience as people. Aesthetics, they calm us down, they make us feel relaxed, they give us a sense of place and time in historical terms. So those are the important benefits for the humans. But then we move on to some of the environmental benefits. So that is the cooling, the shading, the wind speed reduction. They absorb a lot of water during rain events, so they reduce the runoff and load on our stormwater system. And, of course, we can't be selfish and think that the trees are here just for us. They are here for other animals. So they do provide important ecological and habitat values for a range of locally indigenous animals, insects, reptiles, geckos, birds, spiders, as well as a range of introduced animals. So those broad range of human and environmental and ecological benefits are why our trees are here for us.
And it's why we should, because sometimes people think, oh, I don't want to spend money watering the tree. It'll survive anyway. Or, you know, even down to, I don't want to spend money on getting someone in to look at why my tree's not doing well. But if the tree is an asset, you would invest money to preserve that asset, wouldn't you?
Well, look, it's exactly right. It's the same as a house. If your home is an asset, you need to look after it and spend some time and money looking after it. The same for your car. So with trees, sure, in the natural environments, such as conservation parks and out in the wild, they will look after themselves. But once we put a tree in an urban environment, the growing conditions have been altered and modified, and they can have an impact on people or property. So there is an importance on investing some time and money to make sure, firstly, that the trees have favourable and good growing conditions, and also to ensure that we maintain acceptable levels of risk by identifying any tree risk issues and undertaking pruning as required. And in my view, it's money well spent.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's just about investing to maintain your asset. So you let's go back to the watering thing, you know, that Deb talked about. You know, water is the in a way, the best fertilizer you can give any tree. But we, you know, we're not being silly with water. We're just being sensible.
Well, look, we have modified our landscape. Traditionally, we've done a lot of surface sealing, so roads and footpaths and driveways and paved courtyards, and all of these things are have traditionally reduced the water infiltration rate into the ground. So our trees are getting challenged partly because of our human activities. We also are challenging our trees with climatic conditions, like you mentioned before, the drier winter, so we've got less water in the ground. So if we've got any opportunity to add water to the ground, then we should take it. So irrigation is one strategy, absolutely. Drip irrigation systems are really helpful. And water is not that expensive. It is a precious resource that we should use wisely, but giving some valuable water to our trees is really beneficial. But there are other strategies that we can take to help improve water infiltration into the soil, such as reducing our paving extent in our garden areas. We can apply some mulches to help absorb and retain soil moisture. And councils have been very proactive over the last decade or so with some very clever water-sensitive urban design strategies, where they are not capturing the water and sending it down the stormwater system out to the sea as much as they used to. They are trying to capture and reuse water within local areas so that our trees and our environment benefit.
Yeah, amazing. Well, Michael, one last thing I just want to mention, and I should have seen if I can get some you know, figures to back this up. But I believe one of the big reasons now people are chopping trees or removing limbs from trees is pruning to let more sun get to the solar panels. Yet I'm told, and this is where I'd love your opinion, I'm told that the solar panels are more efficient now, and if you make your house hotter, you'll actually need more power to cool it down, whereas if you accept the fact that you've got shade from trees, you'll need less power to keep your house cool. Is that true? Are you seeing more people panicked over not getting, you know, full sun on their solar panels?
Sure. Look, it's a tricky one. I'll say that the most efficient solar system on the planet are the leaves of trees and all plants.
Thank you.
Photosynthesis is the most efficient solar capture device.
Yeah.
Trees are doing their job in shading and cooling, sure. And I accept that in some situations it does shade the solar systems of households. But you're right, I think solar systems are becoming more efficient. I've updated mine recently and have noticed a significant improvement with my solar uptake at home. So again, look, that is an expensive process, but gradually as people replace their solar systems, they'll find they're more efficient, and we can have both valuable shade trees and a more efficient solar system.
Yeah, I haven't had any solar energy generated for 6 years due to my neighbour's tree, but the tree is just so spectacular. I'm just, you know, sitting back and going, wow, admiring its beauty and, you know, just dealing with it, because I'm sure that the house gets a lot of shade as benefit.
Yeah, and cooler, you know, so you're needing to use less power.
Yeah, exactly. And Michael, another aspect of trees that I have to admit, in fact, the whole of what happens below the earth, I was very ignorant of until the last few years, is that there is so much going on beneath the ground, And the trees are a huge part of that. They are keeping everything alive. And that's why it really kills me. When you see green canopy disappearing from your area, you know that all that action down below is disappearing as well.
Well, look, that's right. The soil is an ecosystem in itself. So we have the soil particles themselves and the spaces between the soil particles and the moisture that infiltrates through it when we allow it. But the tree roots provide a source of carbon for a wide range of microorganisms and macroorganisms that live in the soil, such as insects, earthworms, various fungi. And all of these things are working together to create a rich, diverse ecosystem in the soil. And it's the life of that soil that in return keeps the trees healthy, but it also has benefits on human health. If we have healthy soils, then we as people also benefit from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Our special guest is Michael Palamountain, Senior Consulting Arborist with Sophie Thompson here on Talkback Gardening. I've got lots of tree questions. You might be able to chuck a few bits of advice in with Sophie there, Michael. So if you're okay to hang on the line, the number is 1300 222 891. The text line for your comments is 0467 922 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson
on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Our special guest this morning is Michael Palamountain, arborist. We're talking about keeping our big, beautiful assets, our trees, healthy, particularly with the hot weather ahead. I've got lots of questions for Michael and you, Sophie, so if you want to do a two-hander. Joy from Mount Barker, you've been gifted a Wallamai pine. Are you wanting to repot it or plant it into the garden?
I want to keep it in a pot because I'm 84, so I haven't got too many more years, so I want to leave it for the kids. They can do what they like with it when
beautiful.
I'm gone.
Beautiful.
I need to know what size pot to put it up into, and I've saved it because when it came, I came home from the doctor's and it was laying on its side in a box in the full sun outside the door.
Oh, and, my gosh.
It had been there for several hours, I think. My neighbour said that the truck pulled up just after I'd left. Anyway, I brought it in and got it out and thought, oh, my God. So I just stuck it in the sink with plenty of water till it soaked it up and sprayed it. And I've kept it in and I keep moving it. I've got it on a tray that I move backwards and forwards to the light because I get bright light and sunshine early morning and late afternoon. And I've got it. It's been grounded. It's not allowed outside until I find out what I can do to keep it.
Okay, Michael. Now, Wallamai pines are definitely best suited for outdoors. What would you say? And people, if you don't know what one is, this is the amazing dinosaur plant that was thought to be extinct and then found growing in a secret location in the Blue Mountains. But a not-so-secret location where you can see lots of them is the Mount Lofty Botanic Gardens. In some of the gullies up there, they've got wallamais everywhere and they're amazing. So where would you say Joy should keep it, Michael?
Well, certainly the Wallamai pine, it's in the Araucaria family, so the same as the Norfolk Island pines, but just a much older relative of them. It was discovered in the Blue Mountains. So if we can imagine the climatic conditions in the Blue Mountains, it is subtropical with the rainfall around 1,200 to 1,500 millimetres a year falling mainly in the summer. Now, unfortunately, we don't have those conditions here in Adelaide.
No.
So while the trees will grow here, they won't reach the potential 60 metres that they can grow to in their secret location. So having said that, growing them in South Australia is possible and the key ingredient is water. If we grow them in a pot, we are going to be very challenged. The tree wants to be enormous and the root system will consume that soil and any resources in it within the pot in a very short amount of time. So if people would like to grow them in pots, it will be a process of repotting them every few years, similar to a bonsai, which is no easy task. You're going to have to get them out of your container or pot, do some root pruning, replace the soil and amend it with appropriate fertilisers, and get it back in there and add a reliable water source such as an irrigation on a timer. If you do these things, you're going to have a much more successful growing plant. If it's just left in a pot on its own for years on end without attention, it's going to fail.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. Thanks, Joy. We've got a lot of callers, so we're going to rip through them now. Frank from Dorsley is on the line. Hi, Frank.
Yeah, hi, everyone. I've got cops of six really large poplars. I believe they're silver obverse poplars. But the suckers are a real massive nuisance. They can go 10, 20 metres from the trees. They're getting under the pavers. They're, you know, popping up in the lawn. I wonder, is there something easy way of getting rid of them? Because I've tried digging them up and it rips back through the lawn and tears up quite a massive area.
I'm going to pass this to Michael because I think he needs a magic wand here.
Yeah.
So with your poplars, are they the narrow upright poplars like the Lombardy poplars?
I don't know for sure. They were, like, they're about 30 years old. They are very tall. I can put my arms just around them. They're that sort of big of the trunk base.
Okay. So the poplar trees, yes. You're right, Frank. Sometimes these poplar trees can sucker. And the suckering is usually when the root system is saying, I'm hungry, I don't have what I need. So the root system responds. So if your trees have ideal growing conditions, so good mulched layer over the root system, and if possible, adding a drip irrigation system over a large area would be ideal. It depends on what's possible at your property, Frank. But yep. The more favourable the growing conditions are, the tree, the upper part of the tree will grow better and the suckering will be less of a problem. To manage suckering, unfortunately, it is a matter of pruning, but don't use poisons as you'll probably send the poison back to the parent tree.
Right. Okay. Well, I have tried that and it doesn't work anyway. So.
Yeah.
They are such a big tree, you know. They are really...
If it's a silver poplar, they're notorious for suckering too, aren't they, Michael?
That's right. The Populus alba, the ones that grow near the creek line, they are much more prolific. And they've got a very pale bark and a silvery underside to the foliage. Yes, they'll be even more difficult to get under control.
Okay, well, that's what it is. It's silver obverse poplar is what I've been told. So.
Good luck with that, Frank.
Yeah, I think that's all we can say, Frank. Thank you very much for calling. Now, Dot from Stockport, he's asking about cutting back fruit trees. Hi, Dot.
Yes, good morning. How often can fruit trees be cut back by a third, like apricots and a very large mulberry tree?
Well, fruit trees are quite tricky. You have to understand where the fruit trees are flowering and fruiting. So some will produce flowers and fruit on the current season's growth, as in the growth that's occurring this season, and some will grow on two-year-old wood or older. So if you have trees that are flowering on one-year-old or current season's growth and you continually cut it off, you won't get any flowers or fruit. So it is best to stagger your pruning to every 2 years or more where possible so that you allow it to flower and fruit. That will be my strategy.
Yeah. The only problem is I have to be able to net it to keep the birds off, so no point getting fruit that's right up in the air if you can't protect it.
Yeah, so with fruit trees, often people get a balance of winter pruning and summer pruning to manage the trees to keep them at a lower size because you don't want ladders, you don't want to be doing anything like that, and you need to be able to net them. And when they do summer pruning, they're usually talking about up to a third, and that's done after fruiting. So has your apricot already fruited, Dot?
Dot, have we got you there?
Yes. One has.
It has. So if you did a third now, but because you're cutting off, you know, if, as Michael said, trees are the best, most efficient solar panels, solar energy producers, So if you're taking up to a third of the leaves off the tree now, you're going to reduce its growth and make it more manageable. Now, a very large old mulberry, you know, the reality is often you'll get more fruit than you can ever use. So you might even just change the way you net. You might say, I'm going to leave you grow like a big tree because I love you, and I'm just going to net a section of the tree, like lower limbs, because it depends how much fruit you need. So two different options there, Dot. So good luck with
that.
Yeah,
thank you, Dot. And one quick call before we let Michael Whippower Mountain go is from Phil in Gawler East with a half-acre block with a number of trees. Hi, Phil.
G'day, everyone. Thanks for taking my call. Yes, I was just asking about some gum trees I've got quite established, just wanting to understand how to water them. I've been putting a sprinkler on them probably for 6 hours overnight, every so couple of days, just wondering sort of the extent of watering and the depth of watering.
Sure, Phil. Do you know what type of gum trees you have?
No, not exactly. They are just the big, tall, smooth bark, I think, but they've got quite sprawling foliage up at the top, and they're dropping leaves at the moment, which made me wonder whether it was heat stress or... but yes, just wondering, in general, for
trees, so,
not branches to drop.
Yeah. This time of the year, once the heat picks up, the trees will tend to shed more foliage, just a self-preservation strategy. And like you alluded to, they may drop larger branches during extreme heat conditions or in the evenings after the extreme hot days. With tree watering, I would start always with a good layer of mulch so that any water that you do apply is being retained in the soil as best as possible. The approach I take with tree watering is less frequent, longer duration. So don't water your trees every day. I would be looking at watering it once a week during hot weather, sometimes twice a week during hot weather, and consider using one of those long soaker hoses. A lot of people might have those green hoses, leaky hoses, and spread it out over a large area and leave it going for several hours, 3, 4, 5 hours. And what you're trying to do is get the water deep down into the soil profile to encourage the tree's roots to go a little bit deeper. And that way you're charging up the soil and to help the trees get through those dry periods.
Brilliant. Oh, look, that's great, Michael Palamountain. Just on the text line, a few issues to raise with you. On Woolamai Pines, this texter says there is also a pine in the Adelaide Botanical Gardens. It was planted the day I had stem cell transplant 25 years ago. My husband watched them plant it and we always say it is my tree. Oh, that's lovely. And Catherine in Walkerville says, we were in Cologne in Germany 3 weeks ago and saw a Woolamai pine growing really well in their botanic garden, which is great. Now, Shirley from Wyala, quick question, Michael. We have made an underground sump from the tank overflow with the view of storing excess water in the soil. Does Michael have a view if this will support our trees?
Absolutely. Any strategy that you can use to get water into the ground, whether it's a sump, irrigation, cutouts in curbs that councils are doing, rain gardens, all of these things are beneficial in getting water into the ground, and all your plants and trees growing adjacent to that area are going to benefit from it, and thank you for it.
Good work. And this says, we have South Australian-made Tindo solar panels and they still generate until almost dark. Trees and dusts are not a problem, so that's something to look into. Martin from Crystal Brook says, I've lived in my house for 43 years and one of the most satisfying things is to see the birds nesting in the trees I have planted. It does my heart good. Well, you're truly from Sophie and Michael's playbook there. And Jeff from Warradale says, always love listening to Michael. He is a tree guru and a really good person. And we think so too at Talkback Gardening. Michael Palamountain, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Great. Thanks, Deb. Thanks, Sophie.
Thank you, Michael Palamountain, fantastic arborist here in South Australia. We'll get back into your Talkback Gardening calls with Sophie. If you've got more tree questions, Sophie, you can handle that on your own, I know. Anything you want to ask Sophie, she is here for you on 1300 222 891. So get your calls coming.
This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Happy New Year and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, listeners, and happy gardening into the next 2026.
Yes, that's right. 52 glorious weeks ahead of gardening. So if you've got a question for Sophie on a project that you would like to commence or a problem that you've got in your garden, please call now on 1300 222 891. I have a couple of ABC gardening magazines to give away later, one by phone and one by text. Our text line for your comments is 0467 922 891. Let's hop straight into Talk Back Gardening now. Scott is on the line from Morfettville. Scott, you'd like to ask Sophie a propagation question. Good morning.
Hello, morning to you both. I'm feeling a bit stupid about this, Sophie. Locusts are one of my favourite fruits.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just had the locust season. And I would walk past this locust tree and grab a whole handful. And, I mean, I could grow one of these. I mean, how hard can it be to look at these great big seeds? But when I got home, I looked in my copy of Lou Stulinski's Complete Book of Fruit Growing, and he doesn't say anything about growing them from seed. This is about grafting them onto quenched rootstocks.
Yeah.
So do you just stick the seed in the ground?
Yeah, absolutely. They can grow from seed. But I will say that when you grow many things from seed, there's a lot of variability. So they may not come true to type. So they mightn't be as good as the, you know, the tree you're currently enjoying eating from. You can also do them from cutting, apparently. Not that I've ever tried, but you do them from semi-hardwood cutting. So that would be the new growth that's had a chance to harden up, and you could try that now. And then otherwise they do the grafted varieties, because then you're getting a particular set of characteristics that are, you know, desirable. But, look, why not have a go? I know that someone's given me some locusts that they grew from seed, and they, you know, simply had just put the seeds into pots. So I would certainly have a go at growing from seed and cutting and see how you go, Scott.
Oh, great. Oh, yeah, well, that's what I'm doing this afternoon. Thank you, Sophie.
Good on you. Yeah, don't feel silly, Scott. Just give it a go. It sounds like you've got all the tools that you need there in terms of your enthusiasm. Peter is in Goolwa. Now, you've got a septic system, Peter. What's the story?
Well, we're about to get a new... Happy New Year to both. We're about to get a new septic system installed. And what I've got, two small lawn areas. I'm getting rid of the lawn, remediating the soil, putting some gypsum down because there's a lot of clay underneath.
Yep.
With just some good soil and then mulch. Now, the area is going to be fed, obviously, automatically via a constant stream of sprinklers. And so whatever I put there, which I want a native, is going to have to be able to like wet feet. And I'm wondering what I could put in there. I really, you know, a bit of a lot.
Yeah.
I know paper barks grow quite well in moist environments, but I don't particularly like the look of them.
Okay, Peter, can I just ask you a question? Is this your permanent house or is this a holiday home?
No, it's my permanent, beautiful little cottage.
Okay, because that makes a difference. Because when it's a holiday home, it's, you know, they get wet feet for a period of time and they're not for a whole lot. So if it's regular water, there are a whole lot of things that will take more on the moist side. So, for example, a lot of the strappy leaf plants, like the, you know, dionellas, lamandras, they will take more moisture there, not necessarily things like kangaroo paws because they need good drainage. While they don't mind water, they don't like wet feet. Now, things like the dionellas, if you have them, those beautiful blue flowers they produce are an absolute boon for, you know, things like the blue-banded bees and so you'll get lots of good things coming in. While you're right, paper barks do take it. As a group, Callistemons are more tolerant of wet feet than some other plants. So I would also be putting things like that in. You know, there are ground covers, and it, one of the challenges with those septic systems is that they put out a little bit of water all the time. Yeah, rather than, you know, deep soaking, which is, you know, even Michael talked about it before with trees, you know, it's better to do a deep soak less often. But with septic systems, they put out a little bit all the time. So it you may find it's not as wet as what you're expecting it will be. And the most important thing is that, let's say, you know, in because these plants are going to get used to having a having water there all the time, if you go away for 3 months in summer, right, you might need to think about giving them some supplementary watering some while irrigation. They're away, because they're going to think their throats have been cut. So I think you'll find, you know, it's not going to be as wet as you think. So,
Good. All right. Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. I'm happy about the callistemons because the birds love them too. So that's great.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing you could do is head to one of the local native plant nurseries. I'm not sure what one's in your area. I know further down, you know, we've got Second Nature Conservancy that has a nursery at Malang. They also have a nursery at Clayton Bay. So, you know, both of those would have local native plant species. And if you went there, I'm sure they'd give you varieties that don't mind having a bit extra moisture.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much for your advice. Fantastic.
All the best, Peter. Happy gardening.
Thank you.
Thanks, Peter. Guys. Lovely to hear from you. Coming back to Scott's question about locusts, Colette of Clearview on the text line says, the top of my locust tree is feasted on by rainbow lorikeets. I've been digging up self-seeded locusts and giving them away. So far, they're all fruiting. In my experience, there appears to be a near 100% germination rate, even in the lawn. So, Scott, there you go.
Yeah, isn't that fantastic?
So, yeah, brilliant. So give it a go. And Annie from Gawler has got a sick cycad. That sounds pretty difficult. Hi, Annie.
Hello. I don't know whether you – good morning.
Morning.
I don't know whether you got the photo I sent of – I think it's a cycad, you know, the spiky plant.
Mm-hmm. No, we're having trouble with photographs this morning. We haven't been getting quite a few of them through, so sorry we don't. You'll have to explain it, Annie.
It's got it's in clay soil, and I've put clay breaker in it, but the bottom half of it, the new growth is nice and green, but the bottom half is all dry on the ends and going brown and yellow and I think it needs better drainage, but I can't get any more down into it. And I wondered if there's anything that I can help this cycad, because I can't even dig it out. I can't even take it out and put it in a pot. It's too big.
Okay. So you said you've put gypsum or you've done liquid clay breaker?
I've done both.
Okay. It sounds like you've done the right things. Have you, since you've done those things, has the new growth come good, or the new growth was always good? It was always the old growth that wasn't 100%.
It seems to be from the bottom, and we've just had a new flush, and that is perfect. The middle, it seems to be going from the outside and the bottom up, the dry part. Yeah.
Okay. Annie, I'm going to suggest that you get on the internet and reach out to the Palm and Cycad Society. Oh, here we are. I can see it. Oh, yeah. Now I can see your plant. Okay. It's looking, I can see, beautiful new growth. So it's, it's a beautiful cycad, and it is huge. You're right. You're not digging that up and putting that in a pot.
No.
So I would be sending that photo along to the Palm and Cycad Society of South Australia and see if they have any thoughts. You know, it's whether the soil is quite, it's almost like that lower foliage is mottled and getting a bit sunburnt. So whether the soil is a bit alkaline and, you know.
Oh, could be.
See, I can see paving around. Often when we put paving around, there's concrete skirts that hold the paving in place, and they can leach out a bit of lime, and maybe there was a bit of lime or something in the soil which is affecting the older foliage more than the new foliage. The new foliage looks fantastic. So I'd be reaching out to the Palm and Cycad Society and see if they have any thoughts on it, Annie.
Thank you. That would be great. Thank you very much.
Excellent. All the best.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Annie. 1-300-222-891. I've got two ABC gardening magazines to give away. If you would like to win one and you haven't won anything from the ABC in the last month, you can call on 1-300-222-891 or you can text on 0467-922-891.
This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
We are Talk Back Gardening with Sophie. The number is 1-300-222-891. Frances from Walkley Heights has got a question for you, Sophie. It's a top five question. Hi, Frances.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, good morning and Happy New Year to you, Sophie, and also Deb. I'd like Sophie's top five salvias.
Oh, I love this question because I absolutely love salvias. They're gorgeous to bring in the birds, the bees and the butterflies.
Oh, they're beautiful.
They are. So I'm going to give you this top five, but I am going to say not all of them will be as easy to come by as others. So one that's really easy to come by is African Sky, and it's a beautiful one, you know, flowers forever. There's another one I love called Murii, M-U-I-R-I-I, has small foliage and dark blue flowers with a white throat, quite gorgeous. I love Salvia leucantha, which is a dreadful name, L-E-U-C-A-N-T-H-E. And that's a group of salvias that are autumn flowering with velvety purple, pink or white flowers, and they're just gorgeous. Two others that are a bit more unusual. One is a Californian sage called Celestial Blue, and then there's my ultimate favourite salvia, and this has got a dreadfully long name. It's called Salvia canariensis var candidissima. Dreadful long name, has velvety silver foliage, which is beautiful, and sort of magenta pink flowers, and it gets to about a metre and a half high. There are hundreds of others. They're all gorgeous, but they would be my top five, Francis, and they would all grow in full sun. Now, if you want to go and visit a nursery that is known for carrying different salvias, there's a nursery at Milo called Tupelo Grove Nursery.
Yes.
And they would have those ones, whereas in town, you know, you might only find half of them available.
Thank you so much.
Good on you, Frances. Look forward to hearing how the birds, bees and butterflies enjoy your new plants.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Frances. Great to hear from you. Sharon is in Melrose with quite a few gum trees by the sounds of things. Sharon, hello.
Good morning, Sophie and Deb.
Morning. How can we help you?
I have quite a large block in town, but I have at least six gum trees ranging from 10 metres to 30 metres.
Beautiful.
Yes, it is. I've planted shrubs around the place. Some have really struggled. Others have grown okay. But I'm wanting to introduce cut flowers and roses, but I just don't know how to do it with all that competition.
Absolutely. So roses dislike root competition and they particularly dislike trees and probably particularly gums. So, you know, you need to keep the roses away from the root run of the trees. So if there's a spot out the front or out the side where there are less trees, that's where I'd be putting your, you know, roses or dahlias or whatever sort of cut flowers you're going to grow because they want you know, to grow without that. I mean, where you've got the gum trees, grow plants that like growing under gum trees, and it makes life so much easier. So, you know, there's all the native plants like dionellas, which I mentioned before for Peter, bring in native bees and have beautiful strappy leaves, and their natural position is to grow under gum trees. Things like corias, which bring in the birds and the bees too. Corias naturally grow under gum trees, so they're fabulous. And then there's this Australian native plant that I just love called Plectranthus argentatus, and its common name is silver spur flower, and it's an Australian native that doesn't look like an Australian native. And if you visit the Australian native rainforest in at the Botanic Gardens in the city, there's a huge drift of this silver foliage plant. It has white flowers, silver foliage, and it grows under gums beautifully. So, you know, I would be – the things like roses and dahlias and other stuff that you know doesn't like them, you've really got to get at least out of the canopy cover, but ideally away from the root run. But, you know, choose plants that want to grow under gums, and – you know, you could head up to, I mean, you're not far from Aridland's Botanic Gardens. And, yes, you know, if you went to the garden centre or to the plant sales there and chose plants that don't mind growing under gums, then what happens is when we choose the plants that are happy to grow there, it means it gives you more time to fuss over the ones that need a little bit more attention, like roses and dahlias or whatever other cut flowers you're going to grow.
Okay, thank you. With the roses, could I put them into like a cut-off tank, like a raised bed? Could I try that?
You could, but can I tell you, those tree roots will go there. As soon as you start giving them more water, those tree roots will be up and in. And, you know, you could – the other thing to bear in mind is the sides of that tank will get hot, and that soil will get hot, so therefore that soil is drying out more rapidly. You know, it's a bit of a challenge, you know, whether you get really large pots and an irrigation system to those pots. So, you know, and you make sure they're watered sufficiently. So whether that's daily, you know, like wine barrels or something like that. And roses will grow beautifully in pots. And there's many people that have roses in pots, but you just need to water them daily.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. I'm trying to push it uphill, aren't I?
Well, you're trying to stretch the boundaries, and I love that, and we all try and do that, but sometimes we make life a lot harder than it needs to be.
Oh, thanks, Sharon. Thank you. Coming back to your favourite salvia, someone's saying, can you put your top five on Facebook, Sophie? Well, Sophie's a pretty busy person, so I don't know about that, but you can listen back. You can listen back to this podcast on the ABC Listen app anytime that you want to hear it, or you can listen online to any program on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill up to 1 week on the computer online, abc.net.au/Adelaide, and find out the list. But Di says, my best is Blue Salvia Indigo Spires.
Oh, that is lovely. It is not quite as hardy out where I am, so that's why it's not in my list, but it doesn't mean that it's not a beautiful one.
Exactly.
And, you know, we could my previous property actually had a wet spot near the septic, and that's where I grew bog sage, and it was the first time in my life I'd been able to grow it beautifully, and it was purely because it was a spot, you know, which had the septic water going on it, like Peter's spot in Goolwa, and it was the first time I grew it because it was the right conditions.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you, Sophie. We are coming back to your questions in just a moment. The winners of our ABC Gardening Australia magazines today are Jill in Taylor and Bend, and Ian from Morphett Vale. Mary is in Malvern. Now, Mary, your passion fruit is a struggling.
Sophie, it's just regarding a non-grafted passion fruit. I grew it. I've grown them for years now, and unfortunately, initially the rats got to them, so that was the end of that crop. But we've been diligent about keeping rat poison around on the rut so that they run along on the pine ledge of where they've where I've got the passion fruit growing. So I've replanted another, I had seven originally, I've replanted another six. And one of them has really struggled, and I've got the advice from a nursery yesterday via my husband to actually take it out and start again with new soil. But the irony of it is that all the passion fruit have the same soil with the compost, and I've actually granted cut and black pots and cut the bottom out and put the pots in the ground, because I heard that from a niece that that's the best way to grow passion fruit, and I think it is a pretty sensible idea. But they've all got the same soil with some chicken manure and about 50-50 of compost and gardening soil and a little bit of ordinary soil in it as well. So it's a pretty good mixture, but one of them is really sulking. So I'm just wondering if that's such a good thing to dig it out or just to give it.
Yeah, I think when you dig a plant out that's struggling sometimes, particularly at this time of year, you know, it's like the death sentence. I would be looking at other I would be looking at other things. So is the one that's struggling, is that closer to, you know, big trees or shrubs, or is that
There's a car park on the other side of the high fence, but I'm checking all the time to make sure that that area it's only about less than a foot where there's the soil, but there are no weeds there, because I make sure that, you know, there are no weeds on the other side of the fence in case they decide to poison them, because it's a big college next to them. So, yeah, I've initially thought that perhaps having, because there's a swimming pool at the taking up, you know, most of that area, but there's the actual garden bed is about a foot and a half, so it's wide enough, really. Initially, I thought perhaps it was. It wasn't enough soil around it, but I think I think that amount of soil should be sufficient for passion fruit, because they're very shallow rooted, aren't they?
They are. So I, you know, all you can do really, I certainly wouldn't be digging it up if it was me. I would just be treating it with seaweed based plant tonic and seeing what happens. Now, you just said there's a car park on the other side of the fence. So do you mean there's paving on the other side of the fence? So that position is.
It's not paving actually. It's just a bit of.
Oh, okay. Okay, so but that means that's really hot. That's a really hot spot. So until plants get established, passion fruit will take the heat, but until they get established, you know, they might need a bit extra TLC because it's such harsh conditions. So all if it was me, Mary, all I'd be doing is treating it with a seaweed-based plant tonic and, you know, just seeing what happens. Ultimately, if you've got six in and one fails, that's less than 20%. You know, failure rates. So that's actually, for whatever reason it is, if we can't work out what's going wrong, that's not bad. So I would be, you know, treating it with seaweed-based plant tonic and keeping an eye on its watering.
Excellent. Sophie, can you just recap, please, your top five salvias?
I can, and I do apologise because not all of them have easy names. The first one is African Skies. It's one you'll find everywhere, and it's fantastic, and it blooms virtually 12 months of the year. Salvia murii, which is M-U-I-R-I-I. It's a salvia from North Africa, and it's got fabulous dark blue flowers with a white throat. Salvia lucantha is a Mexican sage. That's L-E-U-C-A-N-T-H-A. Has velvety purple, white or pink flowers in autumn. Salvia celestial blue, like it says, it's really spectacular. It's a Californian sage. And then my all-time favourite is Salvia canariensis var candidissima. Dreadful name. Canariensis, meaning it's from the Canary Islands. Candidissima, it has the most amazing silvery foliage and magenta pink flowers. So do check them out. They're gorgeous.
Well, happy new year to you, Sophie. I look forward to working with you in 2026. We'll do it again next weekend from 8 o'clock. Thank you so much for being our wonderful talkback gardener.
My absolute pleasure, Deb. Happy gardening and happy new year to all our listeners. May all your gardening dreams come true.